more than not, will look them up and, you know, deal with the warrants. Now, sometimes police don't issue the warrants. I mean, they can cite and release you, but, you know, you have to worry about losing your stuff, your dog, if you have a dog, about, you know, that job opportunity you have tomorrow, any number of things. And so you're not going to go to the police and use them for protection under those circumstances in most cases.
And that's part of what Cynthia Manor and the coalition that's really doing this and wants to do is they want to create a group where if you feel like you can't go to the police, read everyone, you can, unless you get rich, you know, if you feel you can't go to the police, then maybe you'd go to a church, or maybe you would go to a women's health battered health center, or maybe you would go to this or that group. And what we're hoping to do is we're hoping to find a way of funding this so that we can have a coalition built of several different people from several different walks of life. If you're gay and lesbian, you're going to be more inclined to go to a gay and lesbian church like Lavender Road, and then Gene and I or whoever we're working with can then take next steps that need to be taken or whatever on your behalf. If you're a battered African-American person, perhaps you're going to feel more comfortable going to the ACLU or whatever, but it's a way of...
NAACP. Or maybe somebody else.
Yeah, but it's a way of tying it's an attempt to tie the groups together. So on the 24th of June, we're going to be looking for funding options to try and make something concrete here in Santa Cruz County to help people.
Well, I have a lot of respect for you, John, because I know that when I called you and told you that there was beating of homeless people going on at the Homeless Services Center a week ago, you came down immediately. We actually interviewed someone named Ron who was present when the four youths invaded an abandoned home that he and Joe Barker was later put in the hospital by these youths and another person were sleeping at and were beaten up as they shouted, "Police, on your feet!" And then apparently some think it was a white supremacist group that's still operating. I haven't heard of any arrests. I've heard lots of talk about lineups and people identified and you know, cases being developed. And even old Steve Clark has come out in a little story in the paper that I mentioned, I believe in my last show, that said something to the effect of, well, yeah, there was a... Actually, I guess the Steve Clark story we didn't mention last time, because the Steve Clark story came out on Friday. And there's a little story about a homeless person getting beaten on Friday in the Sentinel. First such story in months, even though it's about the 15th such assault that I know of. Again, not carefully documented, but I'm persuaded, based on first and second-hand accounts, that these have happened. We know that some of them have publicly been presented to Catherine Byers at the task force to examine the camping ordinance, the case of Mr. Cessna. And then, of course, these two most recent cases have been documented by police reports, Joe Barker, and then a case of a guy called Ted, I'm not sure what his last name is, more recently. And then I heard even yesterday when I was out down on the boardwalk, a man named Max was apparently beaten by, and within 4 days, four or five days ago downtown, by trollbuster types. And this goes on. And we get these forums, and I'm glad we have a forum, but we don't get any action in terms of A, dealing with the people who are doing this, but B, dealing with the broader situation where you have homeless people being turned away every night for the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which houses 28 out of a 500 to 1,500 homeless population in Santa Cruz. And the board of directors knows about it. We talked about this on the air last time. The board of directors, including our mayor, Catherine Byers, knows all about it, and their only thing they can do, and they know about the troll bustings because this has happened. Ken Cole, the head of the Homeless Services Center, has brought this directly to the attention of Catherine Byers and directly to the attention of the board last Thursday, and their response is, put it on the agenda for next month.
Right.
So when I hear you saying, oh, there's a meeting on June 24th for fundraising,
well,
that doesn't impress me much. What impresses me is that you are going out there on the streets and dealing with this, that you are trying to expose this. What we need to do is have mass protests in front of the police department, marching from the Homeless Services Center down to the police department, down to the mayor's office, demanding that there be action. And by the way, also demanding that Steve Argue be released from jail. I don't think he should be in there. I think that the police officers who provoked this nasty scene at the protest should be disciplined, and that they should be advised this is not the way to deal with a protest.
I think when you're involved in a battle, you're battling on many different fronts. I think we absolutely need to be marching on the police station. I think we need to be marching on the Sentinel. I think because the Sentinel actually, when they, even though they were quoting someone else, the Sentinel published that bashings of homeless people are not happening. We need to march on the Sentinel and
right,
say, check
your
Sergeant
story. Clark. Sergeant Clark. That is your man who's the liaison.
Not my man.
That's all right. That is Steve Belcher's representative for the Committee for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, Steve Clark. The same guy who drove John Malkin out of town and off the Citizens Police Review Board and threatened him in private. The same man who, when asked why he was stealing blankets from the homeless in March and April of 1996 at the City Hall Sleepers protest vigil, said, "Because I can."
That sounds about right. Yeah, no, I'm not questioning any of that. Believe me, I'm totally on your side. But I think that we have to deal with these things on several different levels. And this forum, which I will be part of, and I will definitely back off of if it's going to be just another lip service thing.
Right.
But what I'm really hoping is that in addition to demonstrations, in addition to sit-in, in addition to all the other things that we're doing, if we can actually get religious and political and business leaders together on the subject of hate crimes, then they as a unified body can make certain demands of the city.
Well, I'm wondering how many people on this forum have actually demanded an end to the sleeping ban or demanded a safe zone. Yeah, I mean, and it's not like they're not that naive. They just are, you know,
but they are politicians.
Pretend they're against hate crimes.
But they are politicians to some degree.
Right.
And if they realize that it's not in there, just like at Star Wars, we were sleeping on the streets in sleeping bags, having a nice time sipping hot chocolate and coffee and some other things. And they didn't hassle us because we had money, right? In the same way, if these people, if we can make it clear that the people of Santa Cruz who vote, who have jobs, who have money, they shouldn't be the ones to make the decisions, but reality speaking, they are the ones to listen to. If those people will get together and say, enough is enough, we're not putting up with it, the message will filter through the people who need their votes and who need the community support. In addition to the demonstrations and everything else like happened yesterday, those are vitally important, not questioning any of that. But I think that we have to deal with things on more than one level.
Oh, I agree.
This is one place.
What is our man over there, the hobo master, think of all this crap? Any comments, or are we just...
I used to be involved with political activism quite a bit, Robert, back in the day. It goes back quite a few years. I've really withdrawn from that over the years, and I appreciate tireless activists that I know. I think you're one of them, Robert, and... I don't know. I think I'm just a psycho cynic about a lot of that kind of stuff. I tend to be very skeptical about protests anymore, although I do appreciate them and support them. I'm homeless myself, but as a wilderness squatter, which is sort of another subject we could easily talk about besides hobo and whatnot. Some of our biggest protection, those of us that live in the woods and in the wilderness here in the mountains of Santa Cruz, are being discreet. Almost the opposite of confrontational.
So we're blowing your cover here.
Right. That's okay. I'm still glad to talk about it. I just won't say where I live.
Catch him as he leaves the studio, officer.
I appreciate what goes on. I guess I often feel that people don't have. We talk about long-range plans or long-range tactics in activism I guess I feel like often people aren't thinking really very long range at all. What's it going to be like in 20 years from now in Santa Cruz when it's all the more gentrified, presumably going to be all the more tighter? I wish that there were a lot of places for homeless people, and that there will be in future years when presumably, if things continue to go the directions that they're going in our society, where there's going to be even more homeless people on the streets. I wish that problem could be solved. I'm not convinced that it is going to be solved. I'm convinced that in 20 years it's going to be worse.
Well, there is the Soylent Green solution.
Right, there's always that. By the way, just on that note, I really appreciate you guys' analysis about the Star Wars. And I'm kind of a sci-fi snob in terms of books and movies. And I think that especially near future science fiction in the sort of cyberpunk genre, especially in movies, have a lot to teach. And I kind of appreciate those fairy tales, as it were, and what we can learn from them. I love Blade Runner and the Terminator series, and I think they had a lot to offer in terms of, again, they're not pretty pictures, but I think they're probably the most realistic given the way the world's going. We're going more and more. I mean, Blade Runner came out 20 years ago, and where are we 20 years later? We're much more a corpo world setup, very much presented in some of those old...
Similar to the Matrix.
Yeah. Although I felt that Matrix was heavy on effects and not very good in the acting.
How about the Fifth Element?
Yeah, I like the Fifth Element a lot. I think for me, probably my...
We've changed my homeless show to a review.
But I do appreciate you guys getting into that subject, because I think, to echo what you said earlier about letting your hair down and having a lot of fun, there is a lot of fun in good movies. I think there's also a lot to learn. I love the Terminator series. I thought especially the second one had a lot to some just very powerful messages. By the way, the hero of the movie was a woman, Sarah Connor. And to bring it back to reality, one of my favorite stories, local stories about that subject, is Peter Lumsdaine and Keith Kohler were inspired by the Terminator movie, the second one especially, and did a thing called the Harriet Tubman / Sarah Connor Brigade. Sarah Connor was the heroine in Terminator 2.
Right.
Went down, spent a year scoping it out, and snuck into a Navistar satellite facility, civilian, it was Rockwell International in, I think, Seal Beach, Long Beach, somewhere down in Southern California.
You called it the Katya Komisarek Brigade.
Right, exactly, in the spirit of Katya's action. And they did some real damage. They destroyed, I've heard figures as low as 3 or 4 million, and I've heard figures as high as 30 or 40 million. And it was—I don't know that anyone ever knew how much damage they did, but they did a lot. And as a plowshares, kind of symbolic action, but a lot—they went a lot further. And Keith and Peter can both talk about this in better detail and whatnot. But they were inspired by the Terminator movie to do their part to stop the technological madness of the war machine, and that's inspiring.
You know, it's interesting, the probably wasn't noticed by a lot of people, but Star Wars, the real Star Wars, the ABM system, was passed last week by the Congress.
Oh, yeah.
Finally.
Yeah, it was passed.
Under Clinton,
yeah.
No less.
It was quietly passed, authorized for 2002, and I thought we had gotten rid of that when we got rid of the Republican, you know, the Bush administration, of course, but we hadn't, because Clinton is, is Bush light, you know. Or it looks like with Yugoslavia, Bush heavy.
Right, it's...
We haven't got much time left here, because, and John, I'm going to give you a chance to talk about it. I would encourage you also to talk more about that, what was said substantively at the Hate Forum around homeless issues by people like Jerry Henry and others who tried to bring up issues that, you know, these politically correct groups just, in my mind, couldn't give a shit about. I mean, and I still find it hard to believe that there's going to be anything coming out of this that will impact homeless people in a real and positive way. But I want to be proved wrong, so prove me wrong.
Well, I'm gonna do my best to join with a bunch of other good people to see if we can't prove you wrong.
Excellent.
And some bad people too, unfortunately. I unfortunately do need to leave though, because I have a baptism at Twin Lakes Beach to go conduct. But basically, though, it was a lot of true stories of where people were coming from. It was people from Pleasure Point. A gay man was knocked off his bike and beaten by skinheads over there. It was about an African-American woman whose kids were brutalized by the Santa Cruz Police Department. It was just the stories of real people crying out in need.
Belcher immediately apologized for
that.
Oh,
of course.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Police Chief Belcher.
There's a lot of hurting going on, and there are a lot of people like you, Robert, who really want to do something about it. And I think that together we can. I think that's what the forum is about. That's what this radio station's about. That's what all of us want. And so I have faith that there are better days coming, but we're going to have to unite. Because if not, then yeah, we're looking at Soylent Green.
Mm-hmm. Soylent Green, for those who don't know, is a movie with Charlton Heston. Came out, almost 30 years ago, which talked about a future where the food supply, of course, is humans who commit suicide. And
when they commit suicide, they're eaten up by garbage trucks. There were these huge garbage trucks with scoops that would go down the street whenever the homeless people were rallying for their rights. would scoop them up and toss them in the back like there was so much garbage.
Really? That's
yeah.
I missed that scene.
And that's
wow.
that's when the hero stands up on the top of the garbage truck and yells, "Solid Green is people!"
That's right.
It's a cool movie. Anyway, I do have to wrap. I appreciate you inviting me on your show, and together we can do it.
Hey, thank you, John. You've been listening to John Phillips, and now in the studio we have the Hobo Master, I like to call him. He's a man who's not only ridden the rails, but he's also written a lot about that in a really striking fanzine. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3, for those of you who wonder. And we do have a call-in number for those of you who want to talk to our guest, the one that remains. Give me your full sign. What moniker are you going by?
It's funny. That's a common thing in hoboing. Monikers, it's very, very common. Almost any hobo or tramp you run into has a funny name, a descriptive funny name, nickname, whatever. I've never gotten one.
Should we name you? No. Any suggestions for names? Call in 427-377.
I'm open to a moniker. It's sort of funny because my project that I do is called Hobos from Hell, Robert, and so like sometimes when I'm at hobo gatherings or collections of people, they'll go, "Oh, there's the hobo from hell," or something like that, just because that's the project I do. But I don't really let that one stick to me personally.
Yeah, what is Hobos from Hell? Tell me about that.
What's that? I started hopping freight trains about 14 years ago, and I was very, very clueless at the time. I'd gotten the necessary. I learned from a woman, by the way, how to hop freight trains. She and some women had successfully hopped trains for a couple thousand miles through many states while they were trying to hitchhike and gotten stuck, and which is a common story. People often discover freight hopping when they're frustrated with hitchhiking. But I learned how to the safety stuff, and I did it my first time on my own up in Oregon while I was visiting my grandpa one time. And I've been hooked ever since. And early on, I really wanted to kind of turn people on to, probably number one, the safety stuff involved, because it's a dangerous activity, semi-dangerous. People can get hurt and killed, and people do get hurt and killed. And I also wanted to turn people on as to maps and you know, information on how to get around easier, because I had a lot of frustrating experiences in my first two or three years of freight hopping, of spending just days in freight yards trying to get out and then finding out 2 days later that I was waiting at the wrong end of the freight yard, or that I wasn't aware of something. And so I started a tiny little newsletter back then that was just 8 pages long, with maps and a little bit of safety information, and I think it had a single page story in it, an adventure story of being out on the rails. And it's grown to a 110-page zine with a color cover 10 years later. That was about 10 years ago, I guess, when I first
did. How many issues of this have you
published? Just five. They come. I just did the fifth issue, and I didn't. You asked me to bring one in, and I actually don't have any with me right currently. So,
rats.
But it's gone from an informational resource little newsletter to pretty much a storytelling zine. I don't even do maps anymore or how-to advice, although I try to point people in that direction. But it's just stories, people's adventure stories. A lot of people send me stories now, some of them quite hefty. They have 10-page, 12-page stories, and by the time I combine them with graphics in my zine, they can be 15, 16 pages long. And then, of course, a lot of people will send me a one-page story or a two-page story. And I basically don't write, Robert. I don't like my own writing.
You're an editor.
Right. For lack of a better word, editor. I often think of it as I like to use
compiler?
Yeah, a compiler or a collagist, because I'm real big on graphics, and so I include a lot of graphics with the stories. And most of the graphics are photos that either I've taken or a lot of friends have sent to me or taken out on the rails. And various images, sometimes they're cartoon images out of old railroad safety propaganda, you name it, passenger propaganda, whatnot. And it all just comes together in hopefully a fun format of storytelling, in this case, written storytelling.
How's hoboing changed in the last 10 years? Has there been a shift in any way in terms of, I don't know, the facilities available, or the kinds of people who are doing it, or the conditions under which it's being done?
I think so. It's funny that you say 10 years, because I kind of, well, for one, my own personal project's 10 years old, but something certainly that I've noticed since I've been hopping for 14 years is in the last 10, maybe 15 years, there's a lot of young people out on the rails that kind of fall into, oh, I guess I would, if I had to categorize it, I'd say the punk, anarchist, activist, college student kind of
kids. As distinguished from what group before?
Well, there's a lot of groups out on the rails. Probably the people that most closely fit what I would call the traditional definition of hobos are the Mexican migrant laborers who are using the trains to get around. They're migrant. They may even yearly cross the border, or more than once a year, cross the border from Mexico into the U.S. There are freight trains in Mexico, and a lot of people hop down there, although I understand that's changing because the companies have been, they used to be nationalized, and now they've gone to privatization down there, and what I understand, there are American companies buying out the rails in Mexico, and it's getting much tougher to hop down there, and they're actually closing a lot of rail lines. But anyway, Mexican migrant laborers doing the fruit harvests up in Oregon and Washington, and basically getting around on the rails, they probably the most closely nowadays resemble the old traditional idea of a hobo being a migrant worker that travels.
I know the Wobblies, the IWW, used to ride around on the rails.
Yeah, yeah.
Back around, 1904 to 1924.
Yeah, and through the teens and 20s. Yeah, there's a long, wonderful, just very, I think, very sweet tradition and history of activist rail riders, and the Wobblies.
The IWW is the Industrial Workers of the World, one of the most radical unions that actually, They're big in mythology now, but I think they actually had significant impact, at least for the first 15 years of their existence.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Oh, sorry, that was badly timed. Want to say Lee?
Yes?
Love you. And Emma wants you to wait until after the show, because she's Robert's relief, and she wants to see you.
Cool.
You know Emma, you just don't know her radio name.
Well, I want to see what goes on with those two.
No, you don't.
Okay, well, I'll...
You don't want to see that.
Oh, okay.
It'll ruin your sex life forever. Bye.
We're expanding our topics to sex life.
My favorite topic.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Wobs were awesome. There's funny old stories about... because basically a lot of what they were doing was they were going into, there would be strikes, you know. I know that on the West Coast here there were a lot of big strikes with the dock workers in places like Portland and probably to lesser degree Western.
San Diego?
Yeah, Western. Oh boy, San Diego. That was a very, very redneck, right-wing place way back in the day, and still is. And Wobblies would stream into where these strikes were from all over the country and support the strikers, whoever the strikers were. And of course, they're the industrial workers of the world, which in industrial, in this case, meant industrial unionism as opposed to trade unionism, a much more powerful form of unionism. And anyway, they would stream in on the trains and often even screw up the bosses all the more by pretending to be scabs, and they'd hire on in mass often because the bosses would be very, you know, their hands were tied. The strikers would have been fired last week, and everything's at a standstill. The ships are waiting there, whatnot. You know, if it's a port, if it's different kinds of strikes. There was of course strikes in other places, but some of the ports here on the West Coast were the big ones. And all of a sudden, you've got all these kind of trampy looking guys coming into town on the trains by the hundreds, and you hire them, right? They're scabs. Well, actually, they're Wobblies. And all of a sudden, things start slowing down, and things started getting sabotaged and whatnot. And of course, that batch would get fired, and there'd be a new batch following. Anyway, the story goes, you'd jump into a boxcar, and if, you know, whatever you were doing, even if you were a scab or whatnot, and there'd be a bunch of Wobblies in the boxcar, and they'd say, "Where's your red card?" You know, the Wobblies had a little red book, a little red card with your stamps in it. And if you didn't have your red book, you had two choices. You either signed up and joined the Wobblies, or you were out the boxcar, regardless of the speed.
Sounds like a... unpleasant situation.
Yeah, the Wobblies weren't wimpy. They were pretty hardcore, and you know, of course, one of their own old slogans was "Never forget sabotage." When all else fails, they would put the figurative, you know, the wooden shoe in the works, so to speak.
Wobblies were broken by the criminal syndicalism laws, as well as, of course, I guess some of them went into the Communist Party after the Russian Revolution. And then there was, in the 20s, there was just a large era of, I don't know, I'm not quite sure what actually broke the Wobblies. But that's I guess what we're talking more about is the rails. And what about today with migrant workers? You know, you still got huge numbers of migrant workers. You say that they're a large class using the rails, and that there's an increasing crackdown, mainly, I guess, through privatization in Mexico.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about the Mexico scene, just that it's been privatized, and I've heard that not only are they cutting a lot of rail service for I don't know what reasons, there is a really good bus system in Mexico, and that doesn't really affect freight trains per se, but in terms of passenger service, I think maybe the trains are losing out in Mexico to buses.
What about immigrant workers up here today? Is there a lot of that happening here in the U.S.?
I think there's a lot. These aren't you're not going to see Mexican migrant laborers usually at the hobo gatherings, say, but in my riding over the 14 years, I've had a lot of great rides, and I don't know Spanish, so there's usually often a kind of a language problem. Is some of the times when I most wish I knew Spanish was when I was riding with Mexicans and other Central Americans on the trains and stuff, but that's how they get around. They're poor. It's a good way to get around. It's
How much, let's look at the last year, how many times have you ridden the rails in the last year?
Probably a good example in the last year. I actually rode three different freight trains in Europe in three different countries there. I was over in Europe being a real low bagger traveler, just basically dumpster diving my way around Europe and riding the freight trains that I could. It's a very, very, very different scene. There doesn't appear to be much of a tradition in history, at least in Western Europe, of hoboing. And did a fair bit of passenger train scamming there too, which worked surprisingly well.
And what is that again? A passenger train scamming?
Scamming, yeah.
How does that work? Tell us about that.
Well, first you just got to be a dumb American. That really helps a lot. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't too hard to pull off. I had a good time over there, and then my lover and I, who I was traveling with, we flew back to the East Coast and visited her family in Maine, and then we joined a third very close hobo friend of mine, who actually was coincidentally on the East Coast then, even though he lives here in the West. We, all three of us, hopped freights from Maine across Canada, all of Canada to the West Coast, and then down the West Coast, about 5,000 miles of rail riding just on that single trip. Just a little bit later in the summer, I and 12 folks hopped freights out to the National Hobo Convention in Britt, Iowa, which happens every August, and it's been happening for 99 years now. This is going to be their 99th year this summer coming up in August. And we had a ball, 12 of us on the trains. And it's not the first time I've hopped with that many. In fact, that's probably the I'd say third, fourth time I've hopped with that many people, and we had surprisingly good luck given our numbers, with no real busts, and we did about 1,500 miles of freight hopping out to Iowa, and then on the way back, just me and one other person hopped back via what they call the High Line, which goes Minnesota, South Dakota, or North Dakota, Montana, Idaho, and down the West Coast.
Lots of women on the freight train?
One of the things that's very exciting for me is that, I've one of the main goals of Hobos from Hell over the years has been to encourage women to hop, and I'm really excited about the fact that this newer generation of hobos does include women a lot more, and I think it's great. I think the gender balance is a lot healthier. Traditionally, it was mostly a man thing, and women, for the obvious sexist reasons in our society, were discouraged from hopping trains, although there were some back in the day, and one of the most famous hobos of all time, Boxcar Bertha, was a very famous...
She had a wonderful book that she wrote about that whole thing, and I I'm looking for it in library after library. I can't seem to find it. So if you find Boxcar Bertha, anybody out there got Boxcar Bertha, please call in. I want to read it again.
Yeah, it's by Ben Reitman, who was, Emma Goldman's lover.
Ben Reitman.
Yeah, Boxcar Bertha, definitely one of the famous hobo heroes of all time.
Who are the famous hobo heroes of the present day? Any people acquired a reputation that...
Well, it's funny. There's a whole scene. I've really only talked about two categories of hobos so far, the young folks that are out doing that. One of the... Out at Britt, Iowa, they're called the Kids, even though I probably represent sort of an older... I'm 44, so I'm on the upper end of that. But there's other categories of hobos. There's also yuppie hobos, and I know that probably on first...
CEO hobos?
Yeah, exactly. At first hearing, it sounds very corny and stupid. What yuppie hobos are mostly weekend warrior types that had on the rails, and I haven't met a yuppie hobo that I didn't like yet. And I have many friends that are in that, if you want to categorize it as that. For one, they tend to have their shit together. They're good. Many of them that I know are actually from the Midwest and the East, where freight hopping is a lot more difficult. You can make a lot more mistakes.
Just sort of like slumming.
You can say that. And they'll travel with scanners and maybe even their cell phone. And they often have their shit together as in terms of maps. And of course, scanners can help a lot too. It's not something that I'm into.
They carry weapons?
Some may. One of the things that I've really appreciated about the yuppie hobos is they tend to really push the literary aspect of the subculture in terms of putting stories out over the internet. And out at Britt, Iowa, I would say that without the yuppie hobos pretty much organizing that scene along with the local townsfolk, the oldest running hobo convention in the country probably wouldn't exist, or it wouldn't exist in its present form. Another category of people are the FTRAs, and these are kind of the bikers of the
FTRA
rails.
FTRA stands for?
Freight Train Riders of America. Although one of the mythologies of their forming, they formed in 1980, is that it stands for Fuck the Reagan Administration. These are primarily Vietnam vets. Many of them are Vietnam vets.
Iraqi vets?
Yeah, some of them, the newer ones.
Kosovo?
Yeah. A lot of them are kind of in the older, you know, sort of the middle-aged to older category, and I can only describe them as the bikers of the rail. Sometimes they're missing limbs, there's a lot of tattoos. They have kind of a free-roaming libertarian attitude, and sometimes they have a real odd mix of patriotism with that kind of libertarian viewpoint that many Vietnam vets have. Often they drink a lot. They show up at Britt every year, and it's fun because I think they're a good category of people. And in terms of people that are actually full-time out on the rails, possibly of any of these categories we've been talking about, they're out there more than anyone, really living on the streets, living on the rails, traveling around. They're tramps, and tramps are famous for getting by. You know, they work as little as possible and drink a lot. Another category is the old-timers, and most of these people are dying. They're gone now, mostly. There's still a few that come out to Britt that were hopping back in the 20s and 30s, and they're amazing. They have some really amazing stories. And back then, that was there were millions of Americans on the rails, migrant laborers, people out of work.
Hopping in the 20s, you have to be about 90 years old.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, well, there's some at Britt that are in their 80s, so I guess they were hopping in the 30s or whatnot. The interesting thing is that some of those people knew the previous generation, which is very interesting because these were people that were hopping at the turn of the century or even earlier than that. And, you know, there's some kind of sociological studies that were done back that indicate there was something around an estimated 4 to 5 million people on the rails in America at the turn of the century. And so there was, you know...
And how many would you estimate now?
It's hard to guess. I'm guessing probably not more than 20,000 and maybe less.
So really, it's kind of like the IWW, which had hundreds of thousands, if not, I don't know, did they have millions? I'm not sure how many they had at their height, but now they're down to like a few...
Yeah,
tiny, teeny, tiny number.
Yeah, maybe a couple thousand wobs altogether, and in terms of even active wobblies, less than that. Yeah, I think in their heyday, God, I don't know. I want to say 700,000, 800,000, but I might be overestimating on that too. But anyway, of course, back in the day, many, many more than now. It's true. It's hoboing. In terms of just sheer numbers of poor people out on the rails, we're talking millions at the turn of the century, and we're talking
thousands. Is this a positive thing? Does this indicate that the poor population has dropped significantly in the last 100 years?
I think part of the story we could say is that some of the things that we maybe take for granted now as support systems, you know, governmental support systems, food stamps, welfare.
Dwindling.
Right. Dwindling quickly. I don't get food stamps anymore. I got them for 7 or 8 years, some years back. That
by choice or because the rules have changed?
The rules have changed, yeah.
So they got rid of you welfare problems.
Right. And that was definitely a change in my life, although I still seem to do fine. I do a lot of dumpster diving, and I work a little bit. I try to put burritos in my belly and coffee in my belly by occasional work. And my zine absorbs a lot of my...
Speaking of your zine, do you have, like, copies of back issues that people can get, put it this way, have copies been placed in a repository, like a library, where people can at least
check it out,
read them? Yeah.
Oh, God, I guess not locally. Occasionally, that's existed in other places. People can write to my P.O. Box if they want, and it costs $6. I basically charge what it costs to make. My P.O. Box is 2497 Santa Cruz, and that's the East Branch, so the zip is 95063.
Again, Post Office Box
2497, and the zip is 95063.
And you should address that to...
Just Hobos from Hell is fine.
Hobos from Hell?
And it's cash. I don't do banks, so just send cash if you want the zine.
How about gold bullion?
Yeah, sure. anything and everything accepted.
Negotiable security.
Silverware. But it is interesting, the question you were asking earlier about one of... Okay, so basically back in the day, a lot of those things didn't exist. I mean, people really would starve. That's one change. And another big change is the advent of cars. Back around by the time of the 30s, even poor families could go in together and afford a car, even if they were migrant laborers, a la Grapes of Wrath. And so that probably was one of the really big things that changed. Was that by the time the 30s had rolled around, even poor people could get around, migrant laborers basically. And you know, by the 40s and 50s, migrant labor patterns had really dwindled in America.
And has it changed from the 50s to the 90s? Has there been a further change, or has it pretty much stayed the same?
I would say that a lot of, you know, that what I was kind of talking about earlier, the tramp crowd, you know, sort of the bikers of the rails, I think those folks have been around through the 50s and 60s and 70s, and really in the 80s and 90s, there's just been this upswing. Again, it's hard to say on numbers. I think it's very hard to say. It's hard to estimate. You know, you can really only estimate. I estimate by the circles that I run in, which is a lot of the crowd that I hang out with, hot freight trains. But it's neat because it's a new generation, and the values are somewhat different, and it's kind of funny to see the young kids out at Britt, Iowa, and some of the sort of culture clash between the younger, you know, a lot of the kids that are out on the rails are hardcore, crusty punk, squatter, often politicized, very politicized, sometimes not, you know, with a lot of different values, you know. Some of these kids are saying the word fuck every three words, you know, and you can guess that's a culture clash with old-time, often Christian, you know, small-town hobo types or out at Britt, Iowa, especially because it's a very small northern Iowa town. So there's been some problems that way. I think the problems are workable. You know, people can work that out basically through tolerance, eh? You know.
So are you have an apprentice program to help aspiring young or old hobos, recovering CEOs, that sort of thing. People who want to, you know, get out there and see the world from the rails.
It's pretty informal. Basically, we hit the rails is what we do. And it's a lot of fun. It's an adventurous way to travel. It has its dangers. I think it, altogether it's less dangerous, especially for women, than hitchhiking. I think it's funner than hitchhiking, although, you know, one of the rewards of hitching, of course, is meeting people and hearing their stories and whatnot.
So that's not one of the rewards of hoboing? You don't meet a lot of
people? Well, not as many, yeah. And it's a lonelier kind of thing. You can wander around freight yards for miles and not see another human being or maybe the occasional worker or whatnot.
What about those bulls we hear about?
Well, those are the people you watch out for. And to be fair, as cops go, they're, generally speaking, a lot mellower than your average...
Your average officer, Lefebvre?
Yes. You can occasionally run into a mean bull. And in fact, back in the day, they were famous for being very mean. And... you know, there was a famous
movie with what's his name? Carradine and
what was that?
And Lee Marvin, Emperor of the North.
Right. I haven't seen
Emperor
it.
Emperor of the North Pole. It was originally called.
Is that it? Where the big bad bull is trying to stop? Yeah. I think I've seen clips of that movie. They're fighting on top of a. That's not all Hollywood. There's a lot of. Many thousands of people were beaten by the bulls back in the day, and many killed. Woody Guthrie has a story in his book Bound for Glory, his autobiography, of as it was common, especially back then when there were a lot of people doing it, befriending a fellow. They jump on a train and they're pulling out of the freight yard, and they see there's a bull, and they're up on top of the freight train, and the bull was taking shots at him and shot his newfound friend. The guy fell off, and Woody Guthrie never saw the guy again, probably killed. It wasn't unusual back then, and they were mean. Bulls nowadays, pretty mellow. Usually they just will kick you off railroad property. Occasionally you'll get ticketed for trespassing, which is a bummer.
Has that happened to you?
Yeah, just a few times. I think 3 times in 14 years.
And what do you do with those tickets?
I don't go. I mean, I'd have to hop freights back to go to court, so I just shine them.
Have you been jailed for?
I've been jailed for freight hopping, but just once in 14 years of riding. Things have heated up recently. There's been some big mergers here, especially in the West, between basically the 4 big companies out here merged and became 2 giant companies.
What are those companies?
It's Union Pacific now, and then Burlington Northern and Santa Fe merged, and they became Burlington Northern Santa Fe, and those are it, aside from a few small little companies, like we have a tiny little company here in Santa Cruz that serves between downtown and Felton. They just own 6 miles of track. So, you know, you'll find a little smattering of small.
Have you ever rid that rail?
I haven't, and I want to. It's probably one of the only places in...
That's a little tourist train that goes past the homeless.
Well, there's that. Yeah. It's the same. Right, exactly. It's the same tracks. They actually, believe it or not, send a little tiny bit of freight up. Just once a week. It's just 1 or 2, 3 lumber cars. Sometimes they're box cars. Sometimes they're lumber cars. They're sending.
You're waiting for that to take that trip up.
Yeah, there. I would like to. It's probably one of the few places. There's maybe a few other places in California where you can actually ride a freight train through old growth redwoods. It goes up through Henry Cow Park.
What about Canada and railing up there?
Canada is gorgeous. I've hopped a couple summers now in Canada.
And freezing in the winter.
Yeah. Oh, sure. The time of year to hop in Canada is pretty limited. Summer months. It's gorgeous. At this point, with the dissolution of the USSR, it's the biggest country in the world. And we just hopped clear across it this last summer. We had a ball. It's gorgeous. I do know people that have hopped up there. I've hopped up there. I've hopped with a few friends. You know, there's somewhat of a punk community up there that hop freights. In the 2 summers I was there, with probably a total between the 2 summers of 4 or 5 thousand miles of riding in Canada, I never saw another hobo or tramp besides the people I were traveling with. And oddly, never saw hobo graffiti, which is a thing that you see in the States a lot. I never saw a hobo campfire under a bridge anywhere. no evidence whatsoever of hoboing there, but I know it goes on. Canadian workers seem to be a little more surprised when they would see you in a freight yard, so probably in terms of numbers they just see total less homeless people, tramps, hobos wandering around freight yards.
We're talking to Lee of Hobos from Hell, who's a, I don't know what you call him, publisher, compiler of tall tales and small tales from the rails. And this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We have veered a bit from our militant, vigilant, civil rights focus. We're not going to veer too far, as you can see by this next song.
Nothing.